All right, gang, welcome to the Hardwick Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. We've got an awesome, awesome show to you, an awesome guest. Ethan Suplee is his name. So Ethan is an actor. You may know him already. He's considerable talent, a lot of accomplishment, diverse and eclectic resume. I mean, he's got some classics. These are classics that I used to watch. Mallrats, My Name is Earl, American History X, Cold Mountain, The Wolf of Wall Street, Remember the Titans. That was kind of his big breakthrough performance with Denzel Washington. John Q, Unstoppable, The Hunt, Chance. We talk about his new movie, Dog. I mean, this guy's been in a lot of TV shows, Boy Meets World. He is just fantastic. I mean, here's some more. It's like Chasing Amy, Dogma. Goodness gracious. This dude is a great actor, and he has been as large as 550 pounds. He's been as small as 200 pounds, and he's now stabilized for the last 5 or 6 years and done a really good job with his health. And what I love so much about him is that he's finding ways to give back and help others and find a community and form a community of like-minded individuals and normalizing great behaviors. And of course, like everybody else, he struggles. He struggles with alcohol abuse. He struggled with drug abuse, struggled with food, and he owns all of it. And it's just a really, really cool story and a great conversation that Ethan and I get into. I sure do hope that you enjoy this one and share it with your friends, of course. And if you really love it, why don't you go ahead and rate and review us? Until then, enjoy this episode. Ethan Suplee, American Glutton. Thanks, guys. Ethan, what's going on, brother?
Hey, dude, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good.
I understand you lost your mother last week.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm really sorry.
You know, it was not... I don't know that you can ever really be super prepared for that, but she had, anyway, it was a relief more than it was like devastating. Okay. It was really actually a relief.
She had some health complications
for years and she had an advanced directive that she was very explicit in, and my father and my sister decided not to honor that. And there was, the only kind of route I had to enforce that was through suing them, which I didn't want to do. And it just kind of went on longer and longer and longer. I mean, it was really crazy. So that it finally happened was truly a relief, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it all sucks, but it's great.
Yeah. It's really complicated, but you didn't want to have to go down a path that's pretty awful. So
yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Family's complicated, isn't it?
Sure is, man.
It is. It is wildly complicated. And how have you managed everything in the meantime after, you know, kind of the fallout of that? And I mean, emotionally, you know?
Yeah, you know, I worry that I'm putting off emotions that might sneak up and get me at some point in the future. You know, it was like I had to fly out and do, there was a bunch of like, physical world stuff I had to do that was a good distraction, you know, like going through her stuff and getting rid of medical equipment that like isn't super easy to get rid of, and we found a retirement home that would take all, you know, boxes and boxes of like unopened food for feeding tubes and adult diapers, like just all that stuff, which you don't want to throw away, you know. It's, and then there's like a weird COVID aspect where you know, whether they would have accepted that kind of stuff, you know, because it's unopened, but is it considered used once it hits your house?
Right.
You know, yeah. So it got super gone, but we got rid of a lot of that. And and so then there was like the finally coming back where I had like a minute of time to like, oh, now I can actually think about this. And I wasn't very emotional. And so there is some fear, like, have I put off dealing with some big emotional swell that's coming out? And I have no idea, but it had been going on for a couple of years. So I actually think that I really just feel like my mom's suffering is over. And, you know, whether I'm being honest with myself or not, I think I should feel relief, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's hard. Emotions are so complicated, and you don't know your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions at the time. And then you can reflect back months or years later and go, oh, that's what that was. That's that. I didn't realize when I retired from the NFL, I was suicidal. And it was about 2 months afterwards. I didn't realize until it was actually about this time last year, after I had trained to be an NFL certified transition coach to help other athletes transition out. And there was a bunch of team clinicians in there and all this work that we did on a weekly basis, couple hour meetings, sitting over Zoom and venting and listening and understanding, because we just didn't deal with emotions in football. In fact, you're asked to put them aside and step in here and fight somebody. And I didn't realize until it was 7 years after I was done that I was heartbroken. I said, oh, there was a moment that I just realized we were on one of these calls, and I like had to blank my screen out, and I just like started crying, and I was like, oh, I was heartbroken. That's what that was. I've never been heartbroken before. And it took my soul with it. So it took that long to finally realize the root of that emotion. So I can't imagine losing a parent. And I know it's complicated. I've got mom with health issues, dad had throat cancer. I understand a little bit, not to the extent that you do, but it's, you never know.
I'm not closed off to the fact that I could experience some big gush of feelings that I'm not feel. I have no idea. You know, I've been trying to just get back to life as much as possible.
Yeah. And that's, I guess at the end of it, if you just kind of get back to work, then things seem to take care of themselves and are easy. And maybe it is putting emotions off. I don't know. I mean, I had a buddy who found out today or last night, I guess, that he lost a Senate race that he was running in. And I ran into him at the gym and I was like, man, how are you? And he's like, well, I'm in here. And he was with one of, he was, you know, he's like sucked last night and back to it today. And his buddy called him this morning. He's like, hey, we're going to sleep in a little bit today, but we're coming in and we're training legs. And I was like, yeah, good. Just, you know, get back to work. And I guess if you can find something that helps you either or both, maybe celebrate and mourn and use it as the same kind of tool, that's your universal tool. It's like weightlifting is that for me. When I want to celebrate, I lift. And if I want to mourn, I lift.
Right. In a way, they do that thing which food also seems to do, which is like complement any sensation, right? If you're sad, it's helpful. If you're happy, it's helpful. It really is. Lifting weights is unique in that way, I think, because cardio doesn't do it for me. If I'm like super happy, a cardio session doesn't help me at all.
Can't wait to run.
Right, exactly. But if I go do deadlifts, it's like, yeah, let's get this, you know?
That's right. That's today my thought going into leg day was, let's fucking trash this thing. And I was like, this thing is my body. I was like, let's destroy it. Like, let's mess this thing up today a little bit. And so it was just a real rough session, but it was super fun. And I was listening to like some old school 80s rock and roll Rat. And it's like, come on, let's get after this a little bit. Yeah.
The I need to be laying on the floor of the gym, which is like the grossest place on earth, right? The floor of the gym. You know, it's like, how often do they really clean? It's got weird hairs and dust and sweat everywhere. But you want to be on the floor at the end of a leg session for one of those. Not always, right? I don't do that every week, but
yes.
Sometimes I want to be laid out on that gym floor.
Yeah. And now everyone wants to lift in their socks or be barefoot. So they're just nasty, just tracking things everywhere. Do you worry after like an event like this, or I guess not worry, are you conscious now more than previously of like an emotional event of not turning to food?
Yeah. You know, here's what I want to say. For me, I'm way more conscious of not turning to drugs and alcohol. Like that for me is a much scarier kind of recourse than food.
Yes.
Because of the fact that we always eat, like you know, I have some hard and fast rules about my diet that I like build up real kind of walls around, but more than anything, it's behavior. So it's like sneaking food is a real no-no for me. Right. And if I start to like sneak food that I don't want my wife or my kids to find out about, if I start behaving in that way, that to me is more severe than if I went and ate McDonald's, which I haven't actually done in many, many years. But like, I would see the path of sneaking food would be a scarier path for me. And so I think there's no universe where I use drugs and alcohol and it isn't sneaky. So it really is like, that's my first thing that I'm thinking about. Like, how am I feeling? Do I need to check in with somebody? Do I need to communicate with my wife? Like, is there any kind of fracture here? And once I go like, okay, I'm feeling okay. I've communicated, I've openly, you know, because it is weird. Like with my mom, there's so many medical things, right? And I was a big opiate guy. And so when you see just a big box of pill bottles, like my first thought is like, bet there's opiates in there, you know, like, right. I have no idea. And in fairness, there's a lot of shit in there that I like don't even know what it means, right? Because
yes,
I don't know what a lot of that stuff is, but like that's a thought I have. And then that's a scary thought, you know what I mean? Because what's the next thing after that? So I have to tell my wife, like, I can't be the guy for that. That's not me. You deal with that. Or if I'm dealing with it, you got to be here with me. Like, don't, you know, just because I feel uncomfortable. And as long as I'm doing that, I'm okay. And so I will say, like, I spent a week in Los Angeles kind of dealing, helping my father and going through my mom's stuff and all of that. And I got to the gym every day, but I was really lax on my diet. Like, I just, it was like, you know, I would ask my dad what he wanted to eat, and then I would just eat that too, you know. And I was kind of like, it was never fast food, it was never McDonald's, but there was a breakfast burrito, and so I'm having a breakfast burrito, and that is really not a normal food thing for me. But that week, I was just like, I'm not gonna make my life overly complicated being here at my father's house and trying to stay really onto this plan that I have. That, like, how much weight am I going to gain in a week while I'm working? You know what I mean? I'm not going to be sitting there gluttonously stuffing my face with grief. I'm not ordering pizzas, but I'm helping clean out my father's house because my mother died. And like, I'm just not going to be super picky, which was fine. And then I got home and I got on the scale and I was like, oh my God, I did gain 10 pounds in that week. And then it was like, you know, it was like the next day, 7 of the pounds was gone. And the day after that, the other 3 were gone. And then it was like, okay, it was, you know, it's not such.
It didn't hurt that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nice to have that flexible mindset. It's like, this isn't the fight that I want to pick today, whether it complicates relationship with the dad or just makes it more difficult, or, hey, everyone's dealing with enough. Just do what you do. Just get through this, you know? Like, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro probably 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
In the middle of kind of being on the diet, and it's like, well, that's not really what I'm eating, but it's like, I'm on a mountain, dude. Just survive and shut up.
Right. You know, get up there and you're like, no, sorry, I eat only chicken, broccoli, and rice.
Oh. Yeah, and just like, oatmeal. Is there? Yeah, do you have any yak, protein? Right.
Like, is yak lean? You're arguing with them. You know, it's so weird because with however lenient I am on myself about diet, which it's not really. I don't want to paint this picture like it's all magical and I can do whatever I want. It's not true.
It's not.
It's really, you know, it is like my mom died, right? I'm not, and I'm with my dad, and my dad wants to eat breakfast burritos. I'm eating a breakfast burrito with him, right? And I asked for mine without cheese, and I asked for egg whites. They didn't do egg whites. They kind of looked at me like I was crazy, and so I ate the whole eggs, which is unusual, but I did it, right? but it's very different from drugs and alcohol, because for me, that is an uncrossable line. And I sometimes even get into this mode of like, well, I survived this week and I'm back on my plan, and it wasn't super hard getting back on my plan. It hasn't been super hard to stay back on my plan. Shouldn't that also apply to drugs and alcohol? And I just know from years of experience that it just doesn't. And so, that to for me is a more, you know, like if you had to take one Percocet every day to live, and you were like, but I like to take 100, and the doctors say like, well, that's going to make you X, Y, and Z, just stick to one. Boy, would that be hard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause one's not going to have the same after a week. One's not going to do anything for you. So now we got to go to two. And after 2 weeks, you got to go to three. And it just ramps up very quickly.
Yeah. And in the same way, you know, when I'm using food to kind of like get off in a way, right, to eat to the point of being so overfilled that it causes euphoria, however that works, right, to eat as an escape. It's also just a totally different thing than going like, all right, I'm in a situation where I'm going to take what's available to me and I'm not going to be super strict, right? It's different than using it to get off, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, 100%. And the thing, it seems with drug and alcohol, like there's, once you open that box, it's really difficult to close it. And it's really, yeah, but food, we have to. You have to live with food. There's no getting around that. You can obviously live without drugs and alcohol. I mean, that's definitely possible to do.
And I've even found, honestly, you know, because I've been sober a long time, but I have had a couple of surgeries, right? And the first few surgeries, I had skin removed, I had a deviated septum repaired, I had a knee surgery, and then I had a bicep surgery. And so for the first three, it was kind of this thing of like, oh, you get a surgery, you have to take pain medicine, right? And so right. I'd have this game with my wife, and I would always sneak through her sock drawer and find the pills and overtake the pills and not take a pill so I could take two later, right? And I just did that. Just what I did. You know, I'm very thankful that I didn't wind up downtown buying heroin on those occasions, right? So I never considered that I was going out, because when the pills ran out, I wasn't taking the pills anymore. And I would always try to talk my way into another prescription, right? And the doctor would go, you don't need it. And I'd go, okay. And that would be that. But I was always kind of cheating with them. And it got to the point where after the last time, my wife was like, I can't go through. I had to get my bicep repaired. And my wife was like, I can't do that again. Like, it's really, really hard on me when you do that. And I was like, oh, okay. Right. Well, I had never even thought of that, right? That I'm putting her in a position where she's now like my drug dealer, because she's holding on to this
thing. Yeah. And she's the one in charge of dispersing them and probably keeping count of them, so she knows you're not sneaking them. And
right. And then she's got to every time deal with the disappointment, because I am sneaking them and I'm, you know, finding where she's hidden them, and she's written down how many there are. And so she knows I've done it. And so it's like this whole big, like, upsetting thing. And I went like, okay, yeah, I really don't want, you know, and this point I've not had the surgery, so I'm rational, and I'm going like, I don't want to do that. So let's like look into what my alternatives are. And, you know, I was able to like talk the doctor into giving me a nerve block on my arm, but,
nice. How long did that last?
Well, it didn't. Actually. he didn't want to do it. He liked to do the surgery to repair the bicep. Then he wanted to check it. When you get the nerve block, your arm's dead. It's like a, it just turns your arm off.
Right.
Oh, so he had somebody put the catheter into the whatever the nerve bundle in your shoulder is, which that hurts so bad when they touch that nerve bundle. It a lot of pain. But they didn't put any of the drug in to numb that nerve bundle. And so I could still move my arm. He does the surgery. I'm in the recovery room and they wake me up and he tells me to start moving my arm. I start moving my arm. And then he's like, good, you can have, you can turn your arm off now. And the guy comes to do it. And he, as he's doing it, the catheter falls out of my shoulder. And he's like, well, we have to put that back in. And it had hurt so bad that I was just like, no, I'm just going to deal with whatever pain. Don't give me pain medicine. I don't want another one. So I never actually got to turn my arm off. But I will say that.
yeah. That's a funny expression. And I turned my arm off.
Yeah. I talked them into giving me ketamine instead of fentanyl while I was unconscious, because there's always this thing, like every time I wake up from a surgery, I'm like, give it to me. Where's the Dilaudid? Where's the morphine? Give me, oh, you know, I want it right now. And so I didn't want to wake up with that. So I think still coming out of like a drug stupor, which is like anesthesia, there is still a little bit of like a, give me something. But the doctor, I had to go through a lot because they want to give you these meds. They don't.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they tell you, is stay ahead of the pain curve. You got to stay ahead of it. Even if it doesn't hurt, you got to take your pain medication. You got to stay. And that's, I found that to be true, but also I never had a problem. Yeah. And there's a couple that I couldn't imagine going without anything because they'll light you up. I bet you didn't sleep well.
I didn't sleep well. And the doctor said to me as I woke up, he said, you told me you would ask me for something and you told me not to give you anything. And I want to give you something. So I need you to make that decision right now. And I said, nope, don't give it to me. Go away. Get out of here. And I just took Tylenol and Advil, and you can kind of cycle them, and you take one and then you take another one 4 hours later. And to be honest with you, like, that was enough. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't sleep well, but
yeah.
I don't know that I was going to sleep well anyway. I don't know if taking a handful of Percocet was going to make me sleep well. I know what it was going to do. It would make me high.
Yeah.
That would happen. But like, and like, maybe it's okay to be high when you're in pain, but like, it's not cool for me because I just want to be high.
Yeah. And it just continues to spiral.
Yeah.
And at first, I'm sure it's fine, right? But then a month into it, you're just a mess.
It just gets out of hand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's more so, I think, than the drugs themselves, it's the behavior. And my behavior gets out of my hands really quickly with drugs. And with food, it's not as quick. It takes a little bit longer, but I know that the propensity for it to get out of hand is there. I know it can get out of hand, and so I gotta clamp down on it.
Because you've gone up and down on your weight loss journey, but now you've stabilized for years.
I've been the weight I'm at now, or you know, I'd say 10 pounds on either side of this weight.
For a male, that's perfect.
Yeah, for four or five years now. And
wow.
There was one point where I was quote unquote massing, where I got 20 pounds up from where I am now. And I was just like, this is insane. I can't do this. You know, it felt very, and you know, that was just like an extra cup of rice at every meal. Was never massing where I was eating pizzas and burgers. It was, you know, it was actually even, I think, less protein than I'm eating now by a little bit. And, you know.
You were just doing kind of a bodybuilding cycle, getting bigger. And
I gained actually 20 pounds, which put me about 10 pounds over my window that I kind of have.
Right.
Which was crazy.
What was your biggest all time?
550.
550. Wow. That's incredible. And now you're down 250, 240 to 260-ish?
265.
Wow. Good for you. So at 550, do you have any idea how much muscle mass you were carrying around?
I bet it
was just enormous, like a wild amount of muscle.
I would assume, I mean, I know for a fact it was more muscle than I got now, you know, but I never, you know, I don't think I could fit on a DEXA scan. They would have had to like, you know, do me.
Put two together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think of how strong you have to be. I mean, imagine loading 300 pounds on your back now and walking around with that on a daily basis.
Yeah. And
just every time you sit up, it's a 300 pound squat bar additional. It's astounding, really. It's kind of quite the feat.
I was never, you know, wheelchair bound or sedentary. I was always up and around. Yeah. It was crazy.
What did it feel like? I know what it felt like to be 300 pounds and I know how uncomfortable I was. What was 550 like?
It's so weird because, you know, I don't even really remember it. I think about things like routines, right? Like I had a routine that I would shower and have to sit down, or I'd start sweating, or I maybe would keep sweating because maybe just standing in the shower, I was sweating, right? Even if it was a relatively cool shower. So I towel off and I have to sit down. I have to wait to start. And then getting dressed, I start sweating again because getting dressed is a physical activity that's like exhausting. And
yeah,
so there was a lot of that. There was a lot of like a true anxiety about being late to anything because rushing would be so physically taxing.
Oh yeah.
Then be out of breath and sweating. I would sweat through. I'd always have to wear multiple shirts so that because just naturally I would
absorb it.
Yeah. You know, washcloths in my hand or folded up or in my pocket or folded up paper towels to mop my brow. And then there was just kind of a constant discomfort. My feet, my knees, my lower back, that was just like constant. And so all of those things have gone away. But I still find myself like having anxiety about being late, not wanting to rush. And I can talk myself through it and go like, you could run to the gate. And I have, and I've actually run to the gate, but it causes so much like mental strife that it's like not worth it. I'd rather just be early, right? And not have to rush, even though I can now physically rush. It's a very weird thing. And my wife has had to put up with a lot because she's just like, you know, she's one of the biggest fights we ever had where I was like, I don't know if this can work, was we had a place in Florida and we had just gotten it. We were new. We went and stayed there and we were going back to the airport. So we didn't really know the area that well. And on the way to the airport, she like pulled off and I was like, I don't think this is right. And she was like, no, I want to stop at this store. And I was like, what? And then the store turned out to be a mall. And I was just like, no, you can't do it. We were on our way to the airport. There was no buffer for a stop at the mall. Right?
And, we can't do this.
And she was just like, we're fine. We don't need, you know, we can arrive there like 45 minutes. And it just, all of it was just like nails on a chalkboard of like, no, I need to be there very early.
Yeah, your internal panic button's just going off.
God, it was going crazy. You know, like just going to a store with her could take a long time, but the mall. And you know, there have been times where she's literally said, "I think we should travel separately." Like that, it's kind of heartbreaking. But like she likes to sometimes miss flights. You know, and I don't think she likes it when it happens, but when she travels with the kids and I'm not with them, they're 50-50 for missing flights.
And, that's hilarious.
I will never miss. I've never missed a flight. I will get there very early. And because I can't, I couldn't rush for the majority of my life. And so right. I now don't, it's so, the idea of it is so awful that I'll like do everything in my power to not do it, even though when she's won the very few times and we have found ourselves running from security to the gate and hearing them announce like, this is the final boarding, and they're calling our name specifically. And you're like, so you're partially mortified and running through an airport. Right. And then I get on the plane and I'm like, oh, like I did that. And it's not the end of the world. I didn't like twist an ankle. I didn't actually harm myself. I didn't sweat through my clothes. You know, I don't think was fun running through an airport, but I did it and it was okay. And I, you know, and it wasn't the end of the world. It would have been the end of the world at 550 pounds.
Oh yeah. You wouldn't have made it.
No, you just don't make it. Or you wind up like getting a stress fracture in your ankle or something. It's just a disaster, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. Like it's like when I think about how I used to have to sit up in bed and there was like a way I would put my legs over the side of the bed and use them as like a momentum to lever me up, to pull the rest of me up. Like, I don't have to do that anymore. You know what I mean? I've had the TSA pre-check, so I don't really take my shoes off anymore. But I remember when I did have to, like, before TSA pre-check existed, and you had to take, after that dude ruined shoes on an airplane for everyone.
Yeah, thanks.
The first time I had to do that, I had to go and sit down to put my shoes back on. And then it was I just wear flip-flops on a plane, right? And, you know, I would go to New York in the winter and have and it's like, this is so fucking stupid. But at the same time, like, at 550 pounds, putting on and taking off shoes is a big exercise. Like, it's a workout, you know. There's all
it's a loaded good morning.
Oh yeah, dude, it's a lot of work. And like, if you do it wrong, you can fuck your body up, you know. Like, any little thing that I did wrong would potentially throw my back out or slip a disc or, you know, pinch a sciatic nerve. Like, there was a lot that I had to think about in those terms. I'm kind of convinced that part of my drug use was like actually trying to treat some of the literal physical pain that I felt. You know,
I bet it was constant.
Yeah, there was a lot of pain or extreme discomfort, extreme physical discomfort. Laying down on my back, it was very hard to breathe because there's just so much pressure on my chest.
Wow.
Like, stuff like that that I don't really think about anymore. It's not even a part. It's just so it came on so gradually that when I was in at the worst of it, on the worst end, it had come on so gradually that it was just life. So you're not even thinking like, this sucks. How did I get, you know what I mean? Like, if I woke up today with a 250 pound plate on my chest, or you know, maybe that's even hyperbolic, just a 45 pound plate on my chest where that's a lot of pressure, right? And it's hard to breathe. It would be shocking. But if you're putting on a couple grams every day, you know, by the time you get to 50 pounds just on your chest, maybe you don't notice it so much, you know?
Right. It's the story of Milo, right? In the weightlifting world, the story of Milo, I think he was a Greek, that the mythology behind it is that he picked up a calf as it was born, and every day he picked that calf up and walked around with it until eventually he could, day by day by day, he got strong enough that he would just pick up this full-grown cow and walk around with her on his back.
Yeah, like, it's like, this is life. This is what I'm picking up every day. Yeah. And taking it off, it's so gradual too that you don't like, you don't get the benefit of waking up. I mean, you kind of do, but it's not quite the same of waking up one day to it just being gone. It's like,
The instant relief would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh my God. It would be amazing.
Just feel like you came out from underwater and you could finally breathe. Like, oh my God, that's amazing. But it's a slow drip.
But then there's some other weird things that I've noticed, which is like, I never really learned how to swim. I always had so much excess fat that I just floated. So I'd like jump in the pool and never think twice about, like, you know, my friends. I remember my friends not being able to just hang out in the center of the pool in the deep end. They'd have to eventually like go to a wall, right? That kind of thing. And I'm just like, it just was like always weird. Like you guys are lazy or something, right? That was my thought.
That's ironic. You were just out there bobbing.
I didn't even think about it, right? But I didn't put it together until I started to sink. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm sinking. And then like I had to actually learn how to swim as an adult. And it was really weird, you know, because I've been swimming my whole life. Like I love the water. It was never anything but pure pleasure. And now when I get into a water where I can't stand and I have to work, it's like weird because I never really learned how to do that.
This isn't near as fun.
No, it's pure work. It's exhausting. And then you start to get like weird cramps in your legs. It's awful.
A pool will drain you faster than anything.
Yep.
Well, 100%. I tell people when they're losing weight, I'm like, just walk and go get in a pool. Hang out. Yeah, you'll lose a lot of weight real quick. So a lot of these things kind of tie into identity, really, right? Like things that you didn't think of as they were coming on, and then now things you kind of have to deal with a little bit. You got anxiety of being late and rushing around, and it's like, hey, you know, that's not part of life anymore, but it still sits there. It's still part of it. I think a lot of people that are losing weight struggle with the identity of losing weight. And so you are viewed as a big man when you walk in the room. Oh, there's Ethan. Wow, Ethan's big. Yeah, you know, there's Nick. Oh, Nick's a big man, commanding presence. All right. You know, and then you kind of own that because I heard somebody smart say, identity is not what you think of you. Identity is not what other people think of you. Identity is what you think other people think of you. So it's kind of through the looking glass or whatever.
Yeah, right? it's mirror.
Yeah, it's very layered. So you've got this identity crisis that we're dealing with as you're losing weight. And a lot of people struggle with that when people start to see them differently and they reflect differently and they speak to them maybe a little bit differently. How did you get over, or how do you get over that identity issue of the former self?
I had this really bad. And I will say that like... I guess I got down from 550 to about 300 pounds at the beginning of 2005. And then I went and started doing My Name Is Earl, and kind of like I had been doing.
Great show, by the way.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one.
Great show. Yeah.
Leading up to that, I had been doing a lot of jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and exercising multiple times a week and lifting some weights, and my diet was perfect. And then I started doing that show and it was like 70 hours a week and I stopped working out and my diet kind of went, it didn't go to like total shit. I wasn't eating McDonald's, but it wasn't as good. Right. And I gained weight. And so by the time the end of that show happened, I was back up at like 400 or over 400 pounds. And so then I got really strict again and I started just doing cardio. I started riding bikes and I started like really starving myself. And I went down to 200 pounds. And at 200 pounds, dude, I was so small and so lean and I never got abs and I never looked the way I wanted to look. And I felt small and it was so jarring to be at 6'1", 200 pounds, that was so small for me that it was like weird. And I didn't like it, to be honest with you. It was too lean. And so I started lifting weights. And then even that, I wasn't putting muscle on fast enough. None of it seemed right. And so I was just like, fuck this, man. I'm just going to eat. I felt like it was harming my career. I didn't like how I looked. I had all this loose skin that was crazy. I was actually getting like negative stories in the press about the loose skin. Like there were multiple stories that said like the downside of weight loss and like would have pictures of me with close-ups of my legs. It was awful.
Unsolicited.
Oh no, paparazzi's falling.
Yeah, they're not asking. Yeah. They're not asking you for your input on this. Yeah.
No. And so I went back up to about 400 pounds again. And, and then we come to that, the incident with my, where I tore my bicep. This was like 2016. And, my wife talked to me about, like, I don't want to have to be this, I don't want to have this problem. Like, we got to, you're going to get a surgery. We got to really figure this out. And so we figured that out. But then there was another factor, which was, and my wife got together with me at my biggest. My wife is my hero, and she's the one who really changed my life. So I owe my whole life to her. Yeah, she's amazing. And she never was like, she never wanted me to diet, nothing. But cut to, you know, all these years later, we now have 4 kids. And she's seen me in every version of me there's been. And we're going to go get this little repair on my bicep. And normally it would be like an outpatient. You do it in some surgery center and then you go home. And they said, because of my weight at this point, I had to go into a hospital. And this, my wife was like, listen, we're not teenagers anymore. It has nothing to do with aesthetics. But I don't want you to have to go into the hospital for a minor surgery. That makes me uncomfortable. So, like, I'm laying all this out on the table. I don't want to be your, I don't want to hold on to your pills. And I don't want you to have to go into a hospital. I don't want you to be so at risk that this little minor thing becomes a big deal. And so I asked them, like, what's the cutoff? And they said 350 pounds. If you are under 350 pounds, you don't have to go into the hospital. And so I was like, great. Is that okay with you? What I said to my wife, and she was like, I don't care what the number is, just get on the other side of the number so that, like, you don't have to, like, it has nothing to do with how you look or anything. And then I just started lifting weights, and I had been doing, you know, these weird starvation or keto things. And I always just rapidly put weight on, or I'd stop losing weight on keto. And so I was like, I want to figure out how to live the rest of my life in a better way. That's not so volatile. And I got to, like, some version of moderation. I eat carbohydrates. I eat a ton of protein. Nothing is technically off limits, but I do have some lines. Like, if I'm in the gym, sugar is perfectly fine. If I'm not feeling good in the gym, I can eat sugar. I don't really eat it outside the gym, but it's not truly off limits. If one of my kids baked a cake, I would have a bite, you know. And I've been basically the weight I am now, other than the one time where I tried to build more muscle, you know, in a surplus of energy a few years ago.
I wonder, because you were so big before, if it was really easy to put that 20 pounds on. Like, if it's just because your body's got that memory that it knows and it can build, and it's like, oh, we've done this before, let's go. Like, you go from, you know, you go from 300 to 400 real quick on My Name is Earl. It's like, boom. It's like, it probably hits you like in a hurry, because you've done that before, you've been there before. And there's not like I think with a lot of people, there's just weird set points, whether it's low or high, where I can't get above that. You know, kids I work with try to gain weight. It's like, can't get above that. It's like, well, you got to keep swinging the hammer, man. Just keep eating. But, you know, for you, it's keep swinging the hammer in the other direction. It's like, got to keep that off, got to fight to keep that off. Otherwise it's got a chance, because it knows it, the body knows it, it'll just kind of naturally or more easily put it back on.
It comes so quick for me I'm talking like from 3000 to 3500 calories a day. I think a part of the problem is that the calories are almost entirely coming from carbs, and I think that there's just more water, and so I'm seeing bigger numbers on the scale, and it's not necessarily all fat. It's not really all lean tissue either, but it's a lot of water. Like, my body has the ability to hold a ton of water. And so that's still taxing on your joints when you're carrying that weight around. You know what I mean?
Huge. Ever they say for every pound on your lower extremity joints, hips, knees, ankles, all the little joints in your feet, 3 to 4 times the force. So for every 50 pounds, it's 150 to 200 additional pounds that those lower extremities feel. I mean, for every step. That is crazy. Yeah. As far as Hollywood goes, you kind of mentioned a little bit, how did they react or how have they reacted to your different body types?
You know, I mean, like I just had a movie out called Dog where I played like an,
that was awesome scene. By the way.
Yeah.
I loved
fun.
It.
I loved it too. And I would Family never have played it. That role bigger. Yeah. I couldn't have, you know what I mean? Unless it was about an ex special forces guy who then gained a bunch of weight, which that could be a story too. I know that happens. I've got some other stuff coming out that is neither here nor there. Like I could have done it overweight. I could have done it more underweight. It didn't matter. It wasn't a part of it. There have been some instances where it's just like people mostly knew me as a certain type, which I took myself out of. And so people have to get to know me again. Right. And so that's just a reality I have to face, which is fine, because like I've been in really wonderful movies. I've been on great television series. Like I don't have anything left to prove to anyone or to myself, but I do want to have like a nice long life with my kids. I got a granddaughter. I want to watch her grow up and be present in her life. And like, that's almost more important to me today than acting jobs.
That's cool. And when you come to that place, it does make it easier that you're not doing something. You don't hold this body for that job or that paycheck, because I've been in that game. You trade your body for a paycheck.
Yeah.
And gladly did it, was happy to do it. Great experience. But at this point, you know, people always like, oh, you can go back and play. It's like, I wouldn't do it for $5 million. Like you could pay me $10 million. I'm not going back in there. Like I don't need it. I don't want it. I'm really happy with my family right now.
Yeah.
It was just a completely different life. I guess part of it maybe would be that they had to appreciate you as the actor, not the role, and see your skills for what they really were, apart from the body.
I think that Hollywood tries to be very like, we value the individual and we want to see past superficial materialistic kind of ideas of what people are. But at the same time, they're very, very into superficial materialistic ideas of what people are. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, they've got quotas on the various types of people that have to be in every movie. And if you're not a part of those quotas, then it becomes harder. And so, you know, I took myself out of this one bracket, which had less people in it, and put myself into another bracket, which has a lot, which is maybe the most dense bracket on earth of like, I don't even know how to call it, but just like average built white men might be the biggest bracket of competition in acting, right? And
come on, man. We'll say you're Jack now.
Right, Jack. Well, Jack might even be worse, right? That might even be more
competition. Now you got to be in competition with, you know, some of the hosses out there. It's like, oh, goodness gracious.
Can't compete with those guys, right? Those guys have been like that for their whole lives. I'm barely like squeaking onto it. And let's be honest, like, when I'm not really trying, you got to have really special light to reveal my abs. You know what I mean? They're not showing up in poor light. And, you know,
good lighting will fix everything. Good lighting and a great mirror.
That's right.
Yeah. What's the key to happiness with your body? Good lighting and a great mirror.
That's it. But, you know, if I diet for 3 months and I'm miserable, I can get down to like abs at any lighting. I can do that now. I know how to do that, but God, does it suck. It sucks so bad. It's so miserable.
Yeah. And it's not all that healthy.
Right.
You know, to get real low body fat in for males isn't really, and for females, it's even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you get to a good point, you know, 12, 15%, females 15 to 20%. Call it a day. You're really healthy there. Don't try to look like the Rock.
Right.
365 days a year. He's trading that body and that work that he does for a paycheck too. It's a huge paycheck.
God, it's a big paycheck.
So it's a lot of big paychecks.
Yeah. You want me to get fat again? Give me a Rock size paycheck. I'm in.
Yeah. Sign me up. I'll take all of that. So give me, before I let you go, give me your daily routine or like, you know, weekly workout routine or whatever.
I wake up and I have, you know, whey protein and water. I go to the gym. And then I eat roughly like four solid meals a day, and then have like two protein shakes, one early morning, one late, in like more towards bed. I do like a push legs pull split, and you know, I don't think I have to kill myself. I mean, I know I don't have to kill myself every day to just maintain my body, right?
Maintenance is easy.
It's pretty damn easy. And I've kind of given up on the idea of building a bunch of muscle. There was like one point where I was like, I want to fill some of this loose skin. And if I'm going to be realistic about it, the amount of muscle I would have to be, I'd have to be one of those like mega gigantic guys. And that's,
yeah,
I'm actually not interested in that at all. And so I really am just maintaining, right? I do actually do more cardio nowadays than I do spend time on weights, but I'm getting my major muscles groups worked out twice a week still.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's the recommendation.
Yeah.
There's the recommendation. Do cardio and get each muscle group worked out twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to fill out the skin, you'd have to look goofy big. You know, like I work out at a really meathead. Yeah, that it's goofy. You know, on pictures it looks great, but when you see Olympians in person, it's very goofy.
Well, honestly, when they're clothed, they all look fat to me.
Just huge shirts, and yeah, they're just,
put them in a suit, they look fat. And that's the other thing where, like, even at my weight now. And my size now, I still think, like, you put me in a suit, I still think I look fat. And I'm like, you know, really 255 and, you know, 8% body fat. I look pretty lean in a suit. I look svelte, right? Yeah. But like, so if I want to get down there and be, you know, 12 to 15% body fat, I got to give up a bunch of lean tissue. And I'm not actually sure I know how to do that other than just stop working out, which I don't want to do. So it's very complicated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Eat less protein and stop working out.
Right. Exactly. And I don't really want to do that. I kind of I've got a groove with how I eat. I like working out, and working out is like beneficial to my mental health. And so I'm kind of just cruising right now and trying to accept myself and going like, I don't even think that if I got to the weights and the numbers that I think I'm saying to you that I'd actually be okay with them. I'd have a whole new crop of problems, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's like when you got down to 200 and you didn't have abs, you're disappointed, right? I mean, so you'll get to 300 and be massive and then just be disappointed, or get to whatever. It's like, just find happiness with yourself and then continue to chip away and see what happens. But it's like, let's not have some random goal to look like somebody else that you're not.
Exactly.
You're just not that person. All right. Tell me about the new Patreon on American Glutton. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, we do. We do. We've got bonus episodes that we do every week. And there's a Discord where we've got, like, basically it's like a chat room. We talk about diet, and people are in there talking about their struggles or their successes. And so that's cool. That's been a lot of fun. You know, it's more than just doing the podcast for me. It's like, you know, on Instagram, I get asked a lot of questions, and it's like, I can't, it would take up my day if I was just like, yeah, I'm going to sit here and answer all of this. But on Patreon, I can get to all the people who are there because it's much less people.
Yes. Yeah. And you can answer a lot of questions at one time, and you're building a community that's normalizing a behavior.
Yeah.
And it's holding you accountable, which is kind of cool that, you know, in your own way, you've created a leadership role, a community, and now you get to hold yourself accountable, and hopefully other people hold themselves accountable as well within that. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And this is what I think that a lot of people might be missing, because just going to a gym, I don't know that you get that community. That's why I think CrossFit is very successful. Even though, like, it's, I don't think those workouts are super beneficial for me because I wind up hurting myself. But I think for younger people, maybe it's just the sense of community they get there.
Yes.
And if you are able to do them, well, that's so magical. And any place that gives you that, I think is going to be a net positive to just like being on your own. I think it's really hard to get any of this stuff done just on your own.
Yes. Yeah. Get a community. You'll go a lot further and a lot longer.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ethan, thank you for joining us. I want to tell everybody to get over to your Patreon. Obviously listen to American Glutton, watch the new movie Dog. I did with my family and kids loved it. My boy asked me today what I was doing, and I told him I was interviewing you, and he was like, no way, from the movie? I was like, yeah, awesome, right? And he's like, he was super pumped. He's like, that was a great movie. So yeah, so thank you for the time and for the wisdom and the stories, and want to wish you the best of luck, bud.
Nick, brother, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, stay in touch, Ethan.
All right, see ya.
All right, bye-bye.